Welcome to the Unqualified Scholar Podcast. My name is Todd. I'm here with my friend Alyssa, and we are going to talk about something I know nothing about. The list is long, and Alyssa is very skilled at Google Foo. So what you got for me today?
Okay. How many times was Ross from Friends married?
How many times was Ross from Friends married? I'm trying to think of my Friends trivia. The list is very short. I don't know. Like, I've seen the show.
Okay.
But I don't know that I've actually, like gotten into it and watched the show. So, two.
Oh, so close. Three times.
Three times. Doggone it. Was he married to one of the girls on the show?
Yes. So, his first wife, Susan,
okay,
ends up leaving him for another woman. And shortly thereafter finds out she's pregnant, and that's how he has his son, Ben. Then he gets married to Emily, but he says, I might actually have this backwards, but he says Rachel's name instead.
That's bad.
Yeah, very bad. And then the third time, him and Rachel get drunk in Las Vegas. I do also have it in the correct order. I do have it in the correct order.
Okay, all right.
They get drunk in Las Vegas and get married.
Always a danger when you're in Las Vegas and consuming alcoholic beverages. you could mess up pretty badly.
Though I believe they might have the, at least like the tattoo parlors and stuff. Mm-hmm. You can't be drunk
to
get a tattoo.
That's a rule?
Yes.
You can be drunk to get married. You can't be drunk to get a tattoo.
Well, see, I'm saying that Las Vegas probably has the rule that you cannot be blackout drunk.
I thought that what happened in Vegas stayed in Vegas.
Not when you sign a legal document.
Yeah, not when you sign legal documents and, yeah, get married. Yeah, that's, so, I mean, there's an analog there from the Bible. You remember, of course, Jacob and Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jacob is in love with Rachel, works for 7 years, and then her dad does the old switcheroo. And
yep.
One of my favorite verses in the Bible, and they woke up in the morning and there was Leah.
Mm.
Something changed. Oh, my goodness. So something I've been working on and thinking about, and this the series that we're working on now is something called Church Hurt. And in Church Hurt, we're trying to understand different ways that we feel hurt, mm-hmm, in the context of being Christians or being part of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And there are three different moves. The first is Church Hurt. And church hurt is the kind of thing where the organization as an organization failed,
mm-hmm,
right? And we talked a little bit in the pre-show, which is always very good.
Yeah, we need to start recording this.
We should probably hit the record button earlier. You all missed it. But in the pre-show, we were talking a little bit about the ways that the church as an organization hurts people. And it's true that every organization on the planet is guilty of not living up to good standards, high ethical standards, right? Mm-hmm. And some companies and organizations are better, some are worse. But I think as the church that, mm-hmm, God has given us to be, like, we should do our best to avoid hurting people from the perspective of being an organization. And we were just talking about how whenever you write policy, you can, mm-hmm, write good policy that is flexible enough, or you can have bad policy that maybe, right, you've even inherited from, mm-hmm, past administrations, and maybe the intent was great, but the follow through, you know, from the written to the real just can be very, very difficult. And so church hurt as the second move, the next sermon will be people hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Bible has a lot to say about people hurt and how we should be careful not to hurt people. But I also feel like in modern culture, we are calling things hurt that aren't necessarily hurt.
Okay.
Because we need struggle to grow.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember when I was a kid, and this might make it in the next week's sermon, so if you're, you know, spoiler alert. I can remember when I was a kid, probably between 10 and 12 years old, I was miles away from home.
Mm.
And I didn't have a cell phone. I can remember my dad hunting me down in the, you know, 1970s wood-sided station wagon and yelling at me to get home. Don't you know it's dinner time? I didn't know. I had no idea. Didn't have a watch. Didn't have anything. You know, sundial, smoke signals, all those kind of things. That's not something that we let our kids do these days.
Right.
Right. We tighten boundaries up. But I think kids need to experience the world in a way that they have to overcome problems. And that's where it's really hard. So we certainly have to be careful with our kids and, you know, give them good boundaries. Mm-hmm. But if they never experience any form of struggle, then they'll never be able to overcome it. And that's hard. It's hard to watch as a parent.
Right.
Yeah. your kids are pretty rough and tumble, aren't they?
Yeah. And we give them a loose leash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time. Especially at church when you know that they're contained, mm-hmm. like they're not going to leave the church property. Right. They're not going to leave the church in general, like building. You could give them that where they can explore, you know, because, I mean, I remember growing up that way.
Yeah.
You'd go to church and that was your, that was your freedom.
There was a little bit of freedom. There was a little bit of I like the idea of a loose leash, but that might hit people wrong, right? I keep my kids on a loose leash. Really? It's a metaphor, people. Yeah. Metaphor, people. So with that, and we have to allow our kids to grow and to develop, and we have to be, as people, we have to be a little bit resilient. So we also, as adults, we have to allow for, like, in the life of following Jesus, we want to be disciples, but we also have to understand that means there's going to be times where we disagree and we have to work with people and we mm-hmm. have to apologize. You know, those kind of things are all things that we should become experts at and be always becoming better at it. so, and then butt hurt. So I don't know how you feel about the word butt.
It's just a word.
It's just a word. Okay. All right. So for me, I mean, I feel a little bit uncomfortable using the word butt in church because it's informal, mm-hmm. right? And we try to be a little bit more formal in that setting. But the idea behind butthurt is this. Sometimes it's a me problem. Sometimes I'm overly sensitive to something or someone. Mm-hmm. And in that oversensitivity, I need to suck it up.
Right.
And that's even when you tell somebody that, they don't always respond very favorably to it. Hey, this is a you problem. You need to suck it up. And people don't like that. so that's what the series is kind of about. And I used a number of different examples on Sunday. And some of these, you know, are people I have knowledge of. None of the examples I used were shoreline situations.
Yeah.
Just because I don't feel like that's really appropriate. People might feel like they're being called out.
Right.
And you know what? Honestly, like when I'm writing sermons, sometimes like they call me out. Mm-hmm. And I try to make sure that I'm being responsive to what the Bible is saying to me, mm-hmm. you know, even before I say it to somebody else. I think that's very important.
Well, I think it's important that it's not calling certain people out in the congregation because there might be some people who know what's going on and there's some people who don't. And it's one of those things where it's kind of better when you're sitting there and then you feel like they're talking to you, even though they don't know what's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know the situation that I'm going through, but what you said really spoke to it so that, you know, it gives it a more of an emphasis. Whereas mm-hmm. if you knew the situation and you're talking about it up there, then it's like, well, now who else knows?
Yeah. So that's actually, like, I'm glad you said that because one of the ways that I prefer to preach, mm-hmm. okay, is to find a book of the Bible and then here we go.
Yeah.
Right. And the sermon calendar is set months in advance. Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting in the pew and you feel like, oh, there's this situation, maybe pastor knows about it, maybe pastor doesn't, mm-hmm. This was months ago.
Right.
You know, talk to God about it because, like, I'm going to talk about the text. I'm going to talk from the text. Mm-hmm. I have only interrupted the sermon calendar maybe twice, okay? Mm-hmm. And the time that stands out most clearly in my mind was, do you remember back in 2020 where we had a worldwide pandemic?
I remember
Something about that. Yeah,
there was something.
I interrupted the sermon calendar, and I joked about this on Sunday. I brought a sermon from the book of Leviticus about quarantines. It was not well received because people were very angry and just very, it was just a very confusing time.
Right.
And I think that's where some people would say, yeah, there was church hurt in that because churches closed and they shouldn't have closed. But you're forgetting the level of confusion that existed in every organization, including the government.
Right.
Nobody knew what was going on.
Right.
And I can remember, so I read a book, big shock, at the beginning of the pandemic about the Great Influenza, is what it's called, The Great Influenza by John Barry. And he looked back at the Spanish flu from 1918.
Yes.
And you can make a checklist of everything he talks about in that book, and you can see it in the pandemic of 2020.
Yep.
Because people fought about whether masks were effective or not.
Yep.
They fought about whether it was safe to go outside or not. Politicians would say, oh yeah, it's fine, go to this event, and people got sick.
Right.
You had people who said, oh, here's the cure. Well, and they didn't even know what caused it until like a decade later.
Yeah.
And so after that influenza, and probably after this influenza, I would imagine, we just want to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
I know I do. I don't want to have to even think about it.
Right.
You know, and I certainly don't want COVID again. Four times is enough. So anyway, institutional hurt and church hurt. And the pandemic, I think, is one of the ones that, like in recent memory, there's a lot of feelings and emotions about that as an event and about how the church should have responded, did respond. All those things are still kind of live in our memory.
I think that that might be alive in a lot of people's church hurt right now because of the way their specific church or the churches around them handled it and the way they feel.
Yeah.
You know,
I think we're having, I think what's happening now is that people are beginning to come back to church.
Mm-hmm.
Like the dust has kind of settled. COVID is much more of a known entity, you know, so even if you get it, it's not quite as scary as it was. You'll have background immunity or you've been vaccinated or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people are beginning to sort of come back and trickle back into the churches. And I think that's good because I can remember during the pandemic how, some of the church consultants that I get their regular emails, they're like, online is the place to be. You need to be 100% online. I'm like, I don't think so. Because we try to put out a good online experience for people, but it's nowhere near the same as being with people in the room and seeing the people that you know and just that experience. And it's actually becoming more and more rare. Church is the one place where people who are very different come together for common cause and common purpose. And I think that's what society is desperate for. Because if you think about like any of your service organizations or any of those kind of things, everybody's pretty much the same. But the church is where people who are very different come together. And so I think that's, I don't think the church is going to do this. It's not going to go all the way down and then no more church. That's not going to happen. I do think there'll be declines and then resurgences. And
yes.
I think it'll come back stronger and better, you know, post-pandemic. I hope so.
Yeah. I think it all depends on how people feel that they're perceived and those kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
People, and that's where the culture of honor really comes into play. Mm-hmm. If we can master the ideas in the culture of honor to truly honor and accept one another, I think that's where the church would, okay, so like realistically, you'd have an initial expansion because people are like, wow, this is great. These people really get along.
Right.
And then you'd have like, you'd have to come back to the culture of honor over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll just have this ebb and flow of people coming and going because.
Well, I think it's important that somebody goes to a church. It doesn't have to be your church. And I know that with pastors, you tend to have like a, almost like a quota that the, you know, they're like, this is what says that your church is doing well or whatever. But I've always looked at it, why are churches competing with each other if we're teaching the same thing? If we're, you know, doing the same thing, our end goal is the same. Why does it matter that I go to this church and you go to that church? Why can't we still be friends? Why can't we still hang out? Why?
Because we're better than them.
You know, so that's the, something I guess I've always wondered growing up, because it, you know, it's like, well, so you're going to church. Yay. Yeah.
So that's where, like, so I actually just read a book called The Infinite Game.
We should have a sound every time.
Like, there should be a page turning or something, or maybe they'll hit the yay button or whatever. But anyway, so I read a book. I just read a book recommended by Adam Wood, The Infinite Game. Okay, so in a finite game, you're competing for a finite amount of resources. Mm-hmm. In an infinite game, like, the resources just keep going. Mm-hmm. Church is an infinite game. Okay, so the goal of the church should not to be having people from one church come to the other, okay? Mm-hmm. But how can we introduce people to Jesus as a church? So the other thing you hit on was, like, metrics, okay? So attendance is a metric because it's countable.
Yeah.
You can say, okay, so attendance is up, attendance is down. Mm-hmm. Giving is another one. Giving is up, giving is down. Mm-hmm. And you try to sort of see, okay, what's going on? Like, this week, the giving was down. Well, it's April 15th. So
everybody's worried about
it. Everybody's got taxes to pay. I typically don't worry too much about finances. Attendance, I think, is good. But then there's the non-measure. You can't measure them as well because there's so much subjectivity involved in there. Mm-hmm. One of the measures of success in my mind would be that you have people who are attending church and God is working in their lives in a very real and tangible way. Mm-hmm. But how do you count that?
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to say, oh yeah, like, on the spiritual scale, we've got 8 out of 10 because these things are happening. It's not measurable.
Right.
Where butts and seats, you can count.
Yeah. Well, my original point with that was, it's sometimes a church is where you first go to learn and you start to grow in it, and then your situation changes, or just different things change, and another church is going to be feeding those needs.
Right.
So certain churches will fill your need for a certain amount of time. I have always pretty much always gone to the same church. Mm-hmm. I grew up, my mom grew up in the church. I grew up in this exact same church until I moved to a different state. And then I tried a little church for a little while because my youth pastor was the pastor, but that's not where I ended up. And then I've ended up at Shoreline. Mm. And it's, you know, like, I've built a family. So to me, it's a little bit different than somebody who maybe is, you know, starting church for the first time or something like that, where it's more of a learning about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I've learned as much as I can learn from this church. I need to go somewhere else to be fed. Whereas I feel like I'm kind of at the point where, yeah, I can learn from the sermons and I can learn from that, but I'm at the point where it's more of, I need to feed into kids ministry or, you know, those people who are coming to learn a little bit or find community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's not about what can I get out of the sermon every Sunday, because I've been through the Bible forward and back several, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Sometimes it's hard to connect. So, like, pastorally, the flip side of that is sometimes you shoot low and sometimes you shoot high.
Yeah.
And if you shoot too high, people look at you funny.
Yeah.
And if you shoot too low, then you're like, okay, everybody's getting it. But they're like, oh, we've heard this 100 times.
Right.
Yeah. And so those are real struggles, you know, and that comes back around to sermon calendar, where it's like, okay, we're going to do Summer in the Psalms again this year. Mm-hmm. And in part because, like, in summer, people go on vacation.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just here and there, and Psalms are a little easier. Mm-hmm. Besides, I've got a career goal to finish preaching the Psalms by the end of my career. So TikTok. I've learned that when people leave whatever church I'm serving, I try not to take it personally.
Yeah.
Right. Because they haven't left Christianity. They've just left the church, you know, and that's okay. Yeah. And if that's where they need... You know, if someone were to come to me and be like, you know, Pastor Todd, this just isn't working for me. Mm-hmm. How can I help you find something that is?
Right.
You know, back in Jackson, I knew the churches pretty well, and I could say, oh yeah, you can go to my buddy's church over here or over there. Mm-hmm. And I've done that, you know. Yeah. I don't know the churches here in Oak Harbor quite as well, although I do know that we are the competition at Shoreline, so.
Well, so... One of the things I saw a post on Facebook recently was about how, like, people leave churches leave a church congregation for loads of different reasons. Mm-hmm. But when you see that person out in the world, like, it doesn't, unless there was conflict, like, personally, why not say hi? Why not, you know, be like, oh, how have you been? It's been forever, you know, just mm-hmm. to catch up with that person in general and not snub them.
Right.
Or be like, because they don't go to my church, I don't know them anymore, you know, kind yeah. of thing. Where that's not the case, I guess.
Yeah, I know for me, I mean, there's a number of people that, you know, if I ran into them on the street, I'd say, hi.
Right.
It's nice to see you. I hope you're doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, I'm being sincere. I'm not trying to be a smarty pants or anything like that. I do hope that people who have left Shoreline are doing well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've picked up some people from other churches. Right. And, you know, it's like, I asked hope, them.
Yeah. I hope know, that they're the congregation that they left from isn't snubbing them because, yeah, you know what I mean? Because yeah. it's not a competition.
Yeah. Yeah, if this is where God wants you to be,
right.
who am I to stand in God's way?
Right.
And if God wants you somewhere else, how can I help you get there? Mm-hmm. Because that's not, if you're listening to this from Shoreline, this is not permission to do anything or go anywhere. But I think that's where, you know, in this Hurt series, one of the things that we really are missing is the ability to have a difficult conversation, mm-hmm. right, about church hurt. Because, mm-hmm. like, I can play both sides of a lot of different situations. Let me forget. We'll talk about the pregnant woman.
Okay.
but I can play both sides because organizationally, I know there are things that, like, I am constrained mm-hmm. by the legal environment, the human resources environment,
right.
Pastoral confidence. All these different things are things that don't allow me to share everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, sometimes you have to give enough information to, like, you can't just say nothing every right. time, because then that just creates a whole host of other problems. Right. Well, you have to trust me. Well, are you trustworthy? Mm-hmm. If I weren't trustworthy, I'd be a truck driver because it's a whole lot easier. the pregnant woman. Mm-hmm. So I have a friend who, during her first pregnancy, the church either miscommunicated or kind of changed the rules midstream. Because there's a predictable timeline when it comes to a pregnancy.
Yes.
Yeah, there's like 9 months and then there's going to be a baby.
Yeah.
And there's an expectation in legal literature, at least, the Family Medical Leave Act, you know, yes. where you would have time off. And one part of our culture, our Vision 2025 is to model generosity. Mm-hmm. And so if we had a situation where a staff person was pregnant, we would want to say, okay, how much can we give
right.
To pay them during their medical leave, mm-hmm. right? And at the same time, you know, what standard are we going to hold when it comes to allowed time off without replacing that person, mm-hmm. right? Those are all things that businesses have to just deal with. Our intent at Shoreline is to follow FMLA as best we can and to be as generous as we can with our financial resources. Mm-hmm. So this woman was at a church, not Shoreline. She was pregnant with her first child, and either there was a miscommunication about leave or they changed the rules midstream.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the rules may have needed revision. Okay.
Right.
They could have been like from the 1950s, and it's like, you know, see you back at work on Tuesday.
Yeah.
and so that could have been that they needed to revise the rules, but she felt like, okay, this is not what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. And so she has started a series of conversations, with the senior pastor, and her understanding or impression was that he wasn't very forthcoming.
Okay.
Okay. So, like, I can see both sides of that too, right? Yeah. Like, she might be like, if he makes a promise, he may be held to a promise that he doesn't have the authority or the right to make. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to what, like at Shoreline, it would be the guiding principles, the UB discipline, mm-hmm. What the leadership team has decided beforehand. All those things would be things in the back of his mind.
Right.
So he can't, like, put things on the table or make promises that he can't follow through on, mm-hmm. because he would have certain, like, I know for me, there are statutory spending limits
right.
To what I can spend money on. And in that, they have to be budgeted. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it has to be in the budget, in the bank, obviously.
Right.
And it can't be over a certain amount. So I know that pastor is probably dealing with something similar mm-hmm. as he's considering the benefits that maybe have either changed or been miscommunicated. Mm-hmm. So from her perspective, he wasn't very forthcoming and he kind of dodged and he wouldn't really say anything. Uh-huh. So it ended up with, I can't remember if she called it a termination or if she decided to leave, but in that whole conversation, like they had decided to part ways.
Okay.
Which that happens to churches, that happens to people in churches. And when you decide to part ways, there are good ways to do it and there are bad ways to do it.
Right.
So this church basically decided to part ways and offered her a severance package. But attached to that severance was a non-disclosure agreement. And that, or non-disparaging, I think that's kind of the thing there. And the standard was... here's the statement. She was something like this. I am the one who decided to leave the church. That's all I want to say. That was the required statement that she was supposed to give. And then the standard of the non-disclosure was she couldn't talk to any third party about it. Well, when you think about third parties...
How's she supposed to get another job?
That includes her husband, right? Yeah. So if she can't talk to her husband about it, can she talk to her parents?
Depends on how you determine that as a third party.
Yeah. What about her best friend? Can she talk to her best friend?
Right.
And so, wanting to follow the rules because she's a good person, she's looking for like a yes, no answer to, can I talk to my husband about this? And she didn't really get a yes or no. And so, she's got to go consult an attorney and be like, hey, what do I do here?
Right.
And she ultimately decided not to take the financial settlement, which obviously you just had your first kid. You probably could use a little extra money in the bank, especially because you're not working. The baby's adorable, by the way. there was a lot of hurt there. And we entered the situation kind of through a mutual friend, kind of afterwards. And, you know, one of the things I think someone who has been hurt by an organization, they don't necessarily need to go into the organizational leadership side of the discussion. Oh, right. I can see why the pastor would do that, right?
Right.
What they need is, I'm really sorry that happened to you. That wasn't necessarily the church as a whole. Mm-hmm. Because what happens when we experience something negative, what typically happens in that kind of situation is we universalize the pain of something local. Mm-hmm. So all churches are bad. All pastors are bad.
Right.
That you can't do that, right? Mm-hmm. And even this pastor who was involved with this situation, I would want to hesitate to say that he's a bad guy, you know, because I know as a pastor there are constraints on all kinds of constraints you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So when we entered into a relationship with these folks, one of the things we wanted to do is just believe them. Yeah. You know, I believe you had a bad situation. At the time, the church I was involved in, we tried to minimize, you know, hurt to other people. and we wanted this couple to just come to church. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, okay, you've got baggage, I've got baggage, everybody's got a church hurt story where the church didn't meet up to the high standards. But that doesn't mean that you quit, mm-hmm. you know, because like we were talking about earlier, you need struggle to grow.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to struggle with the limits of a human organization. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to struggle with your own limits as a person. Mm-hmm. And so we had them come to church. We were able to kind of participate in a restoration. It was a very informal process. It involves things like dinner at my house, mm-hmm. you know, which is usually a good time. But we were able to just kind of enter in and love on them and kind of get them reestablished in the church.
Yeah.
So that now, I mean, they've moved, like you suggested, like sometimes you're at a place for a time and then it's time to move on. They've mm-hmm. moved on to another location. And I don't know if professional ministry is in the cards for this couple in the future.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully they are doing well and serving enthusiastically wherever they are. It's a shame they're so far away. We'd love to have them here.
Yeah.
So when it comes to, like, I go back to my definition of church hurt, and I think there's just one place in the Bible that I could be very clear and say, this is an example of church hurt. So okay. In 3 John, so 3 John is just a very few verses, and the Apostle John is writing to a church that is going through some trouble. The elder, that's John, to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth, local leadership. Dear friend, I pray that you enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. It gave me great joy when some believers came and testified about your faithfulness to the truth, telling how you continue to walk in it. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in truth. So this is a short letter. John is okay. writing a short letter to Gaius. I love the way that he says this. So, like, when I think about somebody who's sick, I think about this. A Christian who's ill, hey, your soul is fantastic because you are loved by God. God cares for you deeply, and I hope your body is every bit as good as that. Dear friend, you are faithful in what you're doing for the brothers and sisters, even though they are strangers to you. They have told the church about your love. Please send them on their way in a manner that honors God. It was for the sake of the name they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such people so we may work together for the truth. Okay, so the situation is that in the ancient world, teachers would leave from the apostles mm-hmm. and they would travel around to different churches, kind of spreading the gospel mm-hmm. and helping the church see how the gospel was represented and reflected in the Old Testament.
Right.
They would tell the stories about Jesus, the authoritative traditional stories. They would pass them around. They would bring a letter from the apostles. Mm-hmm. They would correct behaviors. They would lead one way or the other as was appropriate. Mm-hmm. Until you get, and when there's a problem, they would address the problem. So 3 John 9 says this, I wrote to the church. Okay, so the apostle John wrote to the church that Gaius is a part of, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, will not welcome us. Okay, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. When you get a letter from an apostle, you're supposed to receive the apostolic letter. So when I come, I will call attention to what he is doing, spreading malicious nonsense about us. Not satisfied with that, he even refuses to welcome other believers. He stops those who want to do so and puts them out of the church. Okay, that is church hurt.
Yeah.
Okay, so what Diotrephes is doing is he is misusing his authority to discipline members of the church mm-hmm. who are respecting apostolic authority. So that to me is the clearest example of an organization that is failing to hold up to that high ethical standard.
Okay.
But the flip side of it is, like, even with that, like, you can see the larger connected network of churches where John is entering in to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where, like, yeah, this is church hurt. Those people were hurt by the church. But the church is going to come back and make sure that it handles the guy who caused the problem right. from the beginning. John goes on and he says, and this is like the rest of the letter, right? Dear friend, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God. Anyone who does what is evil has not seen God. Demetrius, the guy who's carrying the letter from the apostles, mm-hmm. who also has the authority to step in and solve the problem.
Okay.
Is well spoken of by everyone and even by the truth itself. We also speak well of him, and you know that our testimony is true. I have much to write you, but I don't want to do so with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon, and we will talk face to face. Peace to you. The friends here send their greetings. Greet the friends there by name. Now, I love 3 John, right? Mm-hmm. Because what John is saying is, let Demetrius know that, or let Diotrephes know that, I'm going to come and get some things straight with him.
Right.
And, like, Diotrephes is going to leave the church hurt.
Yeah.
Unless he can embrace the humility that he needs to realize that he's wrong. Mm-hmm. And we don't know. We don't know if he did or didn't.
Right. Don't have the end of the story.
We don't have the end of the story. And we don't have the end of a lot of stories. Mm-hmm. And so as we think about church hurt, yes, there is some church hurt in the Bible, but it doesn't have to be that way if we will embrace humility and think carefully and clearly about the situations that we're going through. I think I'm done. You can hit the button. And what was it? Friends?
Friends.
You need to ask me Big Bang Theory.
No, because you know Big Bang Theory.
I would probably do better because I... Like, Penny was married before. Before she married... she married... Oh, gosh. She went to Vegas and got married to the tall guy whose name I can't remember.